What they tell us is that the ability of 12 or 15 or 20 young men with rifles who are willing to threaten and intimidate can be absolutely overwhelming. And the way they described schools arbitrarily shut down, women being taken as, quote, wives, the looting, the fear all the time of violence impacting them personally, was a kind of numbing degradation that went on for 2 years. They're so relieved that this is not in their present anymore. They're also terrified that anything at all could bring it back, if not ISIL or a group like that. Who knows? And who knows what the next threat to their well-being might come from.
Just tell me what it's like to work in that kind of environment. You've been there. I don't believe you got that close to Mosul City, but you were still very aware of the fighting going on.
Yeah, well, for sure. I mean, one of the things is the burning of the oil wells. It's just amazing. I mean, this pall hangs over this huge expanse, and you're driving under this cloud all day long. A spectacular wasteland under this black cloud. We were in one place where the fire itself was maybe 50 feet away. I mean, you could feel the heat and these flames just roiling and broiling, almost close enough to touch. And it was in a hospital that had opened, actually, in 2014, just before ISIL took it over. It was pretty shot up, and the director of the hospital said that they had cleared out 50 explosive devices just from the first two floors, and we had to be extremely careful how we moved around in that building because there were four more floors to go through. It was actually in that place that we heard an exchange of AK-47 fire. It was clearly two people firing at each other somewhere within a couple of blocks of where we were standing. And that was not unusual. We've heard rocket fire. We could feel the shaking of some explosives. We could find a lot of pieces of mortars and rockets in places we went through. I have to tell you that when you pick up a tail fin of a mortar shell and you realize it weighs almost 20 pounds, you get a sense of how much firepower puts that thing up 100 feet in the air. So you can see how powerful these explosives are and what they've done to homes and cars and individuals. And sometimes you see bodies too.
So you're giving us an idea there of the desperate situation on the ground, and it doesn't sound like the fight is over yet. How are we doing on funding? Are we there for the long term?
Well, which we do you mean? I mean, the humanitarian community's had a long time.
The UN, of course.
Has had a long time to plan for this, and much of what you see is extremely gratifying. I mean, the speed with which groups like ours and UNHCR and UNICEF plunge in and just negotiate locally with landowners. You know, I mean, the needs are pretty severe. If you're going to put 30,000 people in an emergency site, there has to be a road, there has to be water, there has to be access to electricity. And sometimes groups have to create that on their own. I mean, there was a transformer years ago, but it hasn't worked since, 10 years ago. That's a big job. And also you have to clear out terrain so that dust doesn't become a medical hazard. We've been doing that. I mean, it's very impressive to see these teams, and many of them living in shells of buildings. They don't even go back to the city at night to sleep. I mean, they live and finish this job. Our engineers said they removed mines themselves because they couldn't wait for the mine clearance to come. So, it's not for lack of planning and will. It's just, I think, more not knowing what day and in what direction the next 1,000 displaced are going to come from. That's what you have to adjust to, and that's kind of hard to do.